This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with a World War II bomber pilot celebrating his 100th birthday this weekend. When Roger Jensen joined the military, he already had a degree in commerce from Fresno State, and he and his wife Margaret had already enjoyed 9 months of marriage.
Went into the service in September of 42 and went into the infantry as a private, but then I was assigned to officer's training course in Fort Benning, and so I became a second lieutenant in the Army. I had wanted to get into the Air Force, but they weren't taking cadets at that point. I was disappointed about that and went through different trainings as a first lieutenant in the infantry, and ended up in a Camp Meade in Baltimore, Maryland, which was pretty close to the Pentagon. And so I thought, well, what the heck? I'm going to go over to the Pentagon and see if they do things. So I called in AFSA one day and went over to the Pentagon and went to the recruiting person over there and said, I'd like to join the Air Force. And he said, well, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, I've always wanted to be in the Air Force and fly, and hadn't been accepted, and I'd like to have an opportunity to do so. Well, he says, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make orders transferring you from the infantry to Air Force. Well, of course, as part of the Army at that point, for pilot training. And if you do not pass the physical and mental requirements of pilot training, you go back to your infantry. And I says, well, that's a good deal. So I had an incentive, so to speak, to stay in the Air Force, which I did. And so I was transferred to the Air Force and went through pilot training and physically and, you know, different stations, and then I went through 3 or 4 different airfields before I got my wings, and I took my training in grade as an officer, and so my classmates were all cadets, but so I was an officer with cadets in pilot training in the Air Force. After getting my wings, I was assigned to B-17 training. So I went through B-17 training and ended up getting a crew to fly missions in Europe, and during that process of completing, I completed my B-17 and was putting my crew together to start flying those missions, and they said, we want to transfer you to the B-29 program. And I said, well, I don't have those kind of hours. We're just asking you or telling you we want you in the B-29 program. So I says, okay, and I went up there and I looked at that plane at that point and wondered how in the world that thing could ever get up in the air, of course. But I took through that training and it was interesting. After taking transition and training in the B-29, I was assigned to a group and sent to Guam. And this particular group, the 315th Wing, was made up of, I don't recall how many planes, but I think about 150 total. And they said that this wing will not have any armament. They took all the armament off the 29. All they do is left a couple of guns in the tail end of the plane. And they took all the rest of the armament off. And they said our first missions were flying up at 35,000 feet to drop bombs, and found out that we weren't very accurate because of the height and the wind that was involved. And so the reason they thought that they could have the accuracy at 35,000, we were the only wing in the Air Force that had the APQ-7, which was a secret radar device for bombsight. And so we had a radar bombsight officer in our crew. And so they sent us down to Puerto Rico because for security purposes, they didn't want us have the public in the United States see this plane. Because of the bomb sight, we had an additional wing underneath the original wing. It was much smaller, but it was a wing that manipulated the bomb sight. So we, like I say, we were the only ones that had that, and they put us down to flying night missions at low levels because with that bomb sight, we didn't have to see the target. That bomb sight was just super. And so we flew our missions then at night at relatively low levels, and the accuracy of the anti-aircraft of the Japanese for operation at night was rather insufficient for them, so they weren't very accurate. So they'd shoot it off, but they didn't know how to get to us. And I feel as though that we knew that they had their fighters come up and fly beside us so they could transfer the height and the speeds we were going to the anti-aircraft people down on the ground. And that was the best thing they could have. And so very few people got hit by the anti-aircraft, but I was one of the lucky ones that did get hit, so to speak. And I lost an engine just as we were dropping the bombs on about the fifth or sixth mission we were on of flying from Guam to Tokyo. And we were assigned to bomb nothing but the oil refineries and oil and gasoline fuel storage facilities, and that was... We didn't drop firebombs and that sort of thing. We had our specific targets that we were assigned to. So, fortunately, we just dropped our bombs when they got hit and lost an engine. And so I took drastic action to get out of the range of the anti-aircraft and just put it into a nose drive. And one of our briefings before our missions, we had, I remember so well, that Bull Halsey was there, and he told us, he says, "If you guys get hit, and if you will land on water, I'll get you. Don't worry about that." He says, "You decide what you want to do, but if you get on water, we'll get you." So I thought, and that decision was made up to us ahead of time, that we, if we were hit, we could stay with the plane. We could go to ditch and or whatever action that we wanted to take. So we had decided in our crew that we would stay with the plane. Because if we bailed out over Japan, we knew what kind of actions and treatment that we would get, because particularly the B-29 pilots, they just tortured, you know, to no end. So we decided to stay with that plane, and so we dived down to a real low level and was able to get into Iwo Jima. And Iwo Jima had only been secured a short period of time by us when all this happened, and it was raining, of course. Weather was always a problem on our deals, and it was at night, and so we called in at Iwo for emergency landing at night, and it was raining, and they said, "Well, come on in." He said, "We're under attack, or under a raid now, but you can land." And so we did land on this runway in the dark and raining. They had us, we didn't have much, they wouldn't put the lights on the runway, so it was a scary kinds of situation. After we did land, they escorted us to a parking place and wanted us to get out of the plane as soon as we can to get into a bomb shelter, which we did. We got in there, and there was water, and I remember there was water inside this it was a mess. But we were all whole, and we were on the ground and safe. We were depending on the repair people that was be at Iwo Jima that would get our engines going again. And it so happened that the shrapnel that did knock out our engine was right below my seat. It did enter the plane, and it was right close to me, and I've still got the... And it had hit the oil filter, and so it eliminated the oil availability to that engine, so you had to cut it, and so we had to feather that engine. So anyway, we stayed there until they fixed our plane, and then we flew, of course, back to Guam. At that point, they had to change an engine for us, because it was not operating up to standard. So we were delayed a little bit about getting an engine, because they said the people at GE were on strike. They were making the engines for these things, and it really teed us off to think that these people would be on a strike when we were about making planes.
Yeah.
When we were flying missions. But anyway, we got the plane, and it was put on. And
can I ask you some questions about that mission? Because you described it very well, but I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. How old were you at this point?
I was 24.
24 years old. And how many guys in your crew?
There was 10 of us.
10 guys. And so you drop your bombs, and you get hit. Is that a jolt? Do you feel the plane shudder? What happens in that moment?
Well, of course, we could feel shrapnel explosions in our mission zone. Oh, they'd explode, but we were lucky that we weren't getting hit, but they weren't very accurate.
But this time they got you.
Yeah.
And you knew instantly, right?
Oh, yeah. We lost the oil pressure in that engine. We knew it. We couldn't use that engine then without oil.
But you had decided ahead of time as a crew that if this happened, you would stay with the plane?
Yes, yes.
So you didn't have to make that decision in the moment?
No, that was done ahead of time. We all agreed that we'd stay with the plane. If it crashed, we crashed with it. If it, whatever.
And there are, you know, there have been people over the years who have suggested all those Marines who died at Iwo Jima, it wasn't really that important to take that island. I guess you probably feel differently.
Yeah, that Iwo Jima battle was just unbelievable, and we were so fortunate to be the recipients of the result of acquiring that at a huge price, huge price. So it was the only place that we could land a B-29 between Japan and Guam. So I assume that the top brass, realizing that, made the decision to pay the price, which was a lot of American lives were lost there, as well as Japanese.
And when you're on the way there, is there any doubt that you're going to make it? Was that
well,
questionable?
We felt it would get us partway there. But we knew it wouldn't get us all the way. Of course, we weren't very comfortable. You know, we were kind of iffy.
You're flying low and slow?
Yeah.
Which makes you more vulnerable, too, right?
Well, after we got away from Japan at night, we were not subject to enemy aircraft, really. So we weren't worrying about that. We were worrying about getting there.
Well, and it sounds like you have plenty to worry about because it's dark, it's raining, and you finally get to land at Iwo Jima, but the Japanese are bombing the airstrip.
Aircraft that came in, I think, from Okinawa to Iwo Jima, and they were attacking the airport, but they knocked them out before they got there. So we were subject to the alert, but there was not an effective bombing that took place by the Japanese.
But you don't know that while you're huddled in the wet bomb shelter waiting, huh?
No, we don't know those things. But anyway, that was about, I don't know, our fifth or sixth mission. Then, on August the 6th, Colonel Tippetts and his aircraft, the Enola Gay, was stationed at Tinian and dropped the first bomb. And we were returning from a mission from Japan when they dropped that bomb, and we saw that the smoke and debris in the from where we had dropped our bombs, of course, at a different location.
Right.
We were headed home, but we felt, you know, and so then we said, look over there, and there was all that debris, that smoke and stuff.
And you didn't know what that was, right?
No, we didn't know at that point.
So that had to be, I'm just assuming you'd never seen an explosion cloud like that before.
No. But it was announced to us before we got back to Guam that it was an atomic bomb, and boy, we were elated to think that we did have the atomic bomb and had been authorized to utilize it. The Japanese didn't respond with any surrender, and it was about 3 or 4 days later dropped in Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Nagasaki, we were assigned to fly another mission, even though that we wondered certainly they would surrender. I mean, they had been offered. And so they assigned us to fly a mission to northern Hokkaido, which would be the longest bombing mission we had from the Marianas by the 29s that had been flown.
That mission would also leave Roger with a unique distinction. And wait till you hear about the unintended but significant consequence that final bombing mission of World War II carried. The story of that mission is told in a book called The Last Mission by Jim Smith. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.